Glacier Bank's totally free checking saves you both time and money. Visit your nearest Glacier Bank office today. There's a convenient location near you. Glacier Bank, member FDIC, and an equal housing lender. This morning, we welcome our Attorney General, Austin Knutson. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Well, there's another gentleman here.
Oh, Robert. Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for referring to us as gentlemen. It's Monday. I'm a little slow on the draw.
Always polite.
You know, Austin, this whole thing with human trafficking, this is something you have really jumped on with both feet, and you're not letting go.
Absolutely, guys. This is the single most evil thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't even like using the term human trafficking because I think it's too nice. It pulls the punch. But we have got this. I mean, it's slavery. There's no nice way to say that. It's sex slavery and it's labor slavery. And we're seeing both of them in Montana. This is happening here. This isn't something that's just happening on the East Coast or on the West Coast or down on the southern border. We've got this occurring right here in Montana, and we know about it. It's a much bigger problem than I think anyone in the state probably recognizes. You know, we went to the legislature, and we did a full-scale overhaul of our criminal code to address human trafficking, and I'm really proud of the work that we've been doing at our state divisional criminal investigation. And we've got great partners. We work with local police departments, sheriff's offices. And, guys, this has borne fruit. Within the last, I'd say, roughly 3 or 4 days, we've run a couple of big operations both in Helena and in Bozeman. And we've arrested 10 people in the last couple of days for solicitation of sex with minor children. And under our new statutes, these people are going to be charged with felonies. Believe it or not, that used to be a misdemeanor in Montana. That used to be a slap on the wrist. That's no longer the case, and all these people are going to be charged with felonies. So great, great work, and yeah, we're fighting to end this in Montana.
Earlier this morning had a news story about, this is in Southern California, where a 13-year-old girl was in a parked car, and she put a help me sign up, and people saw it, and they were able to rescue her. She was from Texas, and she was a victim of human trafficking.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, stories like that are very common, What's great about that state is that she was able to communicate and get rescued. But guys, the saddest thing about this is that lots of times these victims are either so scared or they're so manipulated and brainwashed by their traffickers that they won't do that. And that's kind of like that doesn't make sense to most of us, right? Most of us think, oh, well, if I was in that position, I'd be trying to get away and I'd be calling for help at all times. What we find is that's simply not the case. Most of these victims are either being controlled by drugs or they're being manipulated by these extremely talented traffickers, unfortunately. They're really good at manipulating their victims and making sure they stay subservient. But, I mean, that's a great, great result to a horrible situation.
You know, Austin, you made mention of slavery as being the overarching thing that we can talk about, and you mentioned slave labor. How does that work?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we are seeing a few of those cases in Montana. Predominantly, the trafficking cases we see in Montana are child sex, unfortunately. There's no nice way to say that. But we do see the labor cases, and there what you've got is people who are manipulated and brought into the state, primarily around large construction projects. We've seen this in Gallatin County. We've seen these in Missoula County. And I even think we've seen some of these up in Flathead County, where these people are brought in. They're basically threatened with prosecution because usually they're illegal immigrants. They're threatened, like, hey, you're going to go to work on this concrete crew. I'm going to provide you a place to live, but oh, you're going to pay me back for the place to live. You're going to pay me for using my tools. And if you don't like the slave wages that I'm paying you, I'm just going to call Customs and Border Patrol and have you sent back. And so there's usually some kind of overarching threat like that, possibly a threat against family. What you end up with is basically a slave situation.
That sounds like the old company stores and the old mines back in back east.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of times it's even worse than that. I mean, we've seen some pretty squalid situations where these people are forced to live, situations where we had a father and son who, you know, were basically living in a crawl space underneath under someone's stairs, and were paying to live there. They were having to pay extra to use the bathroom. They were having to pay to use their employer's tools. I mean, just an absolute horrible situation. But again, your listeners need to know this is happening in Montana. These things do happen here, and we can no longer afford to just turn a blind eye and think, it doesn't happen here, because it does.
So what can we do to help you do what you're doing?
Well, knowledge is power, right? I mean, that's the single biggest thing. We've really worked hard in the last 3 years under my administration to educate law enforcement, because that really was one of our big stumbling blocks. We had a lot of law enforcement in Montana who just didn't believe that sort of thing happened in Montana, and number two, really didn't know what it looked like. So we now provide comprehensive training to all of our law enforcement in Montana. Everyone who goes through our academy, our law enforcement academy in Montana, gets a full class on human trafficking, the signs, what to look for. We've even gone through and gone back and trained a lot of the older members of the Highway Patrol. And once we've done that, it's been really interesting, because a lot of those troopers will go back and they'll go, oh my God, now that I've had this training, I remember I pulled over a car back in 1998, and knowing what I know now, that was a victim of human trafficking. I just didn't know what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. So I would really advise your listeners, there's some great training out there, it's all online. You can go to the Sentinel Project. That's a nonprofit started by the Montana Beer and Wine Distributors, because they wanted to get involved. And to their credit, they got all of their beer truck drivers trained in human trafficking, which, when you think about it, makes complete sense, because those are the drivers who are in the backs of bars, who are in truck stops, gas stations at weird times, and they're able to be eyes and ears for us. But that training is available online. You can go to YouTube and actually look that up. I'd say take that training, watch it, and be vigilant as you're out and seeing things. If you see something strange, if you see a young person not dressed for the Montana weather, acting really subservient to an older person, just call the hotline, 833-406-STOP. Call the hotline, report it. We'd rather report it and it be nothing than have another victim in Montana.
Okay, what's that number again?
833-406-STOP.
Okay.
All right. All right, what's the story on the BlackRock Mutual Fund?
Well, if folks don't know about BlackRock, BlackRock is a national investing organization that, frankly, is kind of up to no good. What this group has tried to do is, because they can't get their very, very progressive liberal agenda through the Congress, they've decided, well, we'll just start investing in companies and we'll make them go woke, because we'll get on their board, we'll start controlling interests on their board, we'll get controlling interests on their board, and we'll control them that way. And we're seeing this in Montana. BlackRock owns significant amounts of Northwestern Energy, which is, you know, Montana's single largest power producer, and they're trying to make Northwestern Energy go green, basically. Guys, we're a coal state. We're an oil and gas state. It's hard to heat your house with a solar panel in Montana when it's 35 below and the wind's blowing. So that's why this is important to us here in Montana. What BlackRock has started to do now is they started to get the directors on certain corporate boards who have conflicts of interests. they'll get actual BlackRock employees or people who are financially tied to BlackRock, and they'll get them appointed to a lot of these companies' boards of directors. This is a bit wonky, right? And this is kind of in the weeds, but this is really, really important stuff. We start talking about environmental and social governance, or ESG, and that's really what's driving these organizations and driving BlackRock is just this frankly misplaced, in my opinion, misplaced belief in this environmental social governance movement. And the fact is, you can believe those things. If you want to change policy, you need to go to the Congress and you need to get the laws changed. What you don't do is do it in a backhanded way by getting yourselves on corporate boards of directors and forcing companies to do it that way.
Won't the free market really decide, though, since it's a mutual fund? People will stop investing and pull out if it's not making sense, not making money.
Well, I think in some cases that's right. The trick becomes, when you look at BlackRock, they've actually got significant investing in a lot of what our state pension system used to be invested in. And that's where it really got concerning for me as a member of the state land board and frankly as our state's top law enforcement official. We actually have a legal duty under Montana law. The Board of Investments has a legal duty to maximize profit. And the reason for that is because that's our state pension system. That's what that investment is paying for our firefighters, our policemen, our teachers, our state employees' pensions. And so they have a legal obligation to maximize the profit on those investments. What they cannot be doing is looking at outside external influences like, you know, what's Northwestern Energy's policy on recycling plastic? And that's the kind of crazy stuff that this group is getting involved in and pushing on a lot of these corporate boards. And guys, what I just said might sound ridiculous, and it is it absolutely is ridiculous. That is literally the kind of policies that BlackRock is trying to push on a lot of the larger corporations that our state pension systems are invested heavily in. You start looking at Amazon, Apple, a lot of the large energy, you know, oil and gas typically is a really safe investment for state pension systems. And so when you've got companies like that who are now, you know, they're worried about being canceled, they're worried about the woke culture getting after them. So a lot of times these companies will cave to these crazy proposals from BlackRock board directors. That's where this becomes a real issue for Montana.
Where are they getting the funding for this? I mean, my gosh, you don't just walk in and say, I want to be on the board. You've got to buy some significant stock in order to get a seat on the board.
That's very true. I mean, BlackRock is very, very well funded. These are extremely wealthy, extremely liberal, in some cases even international investors from all over. And once you really get down to it, you know, we're not talking about a huge group of people, but this is one of those things that the more layers of the onion that we peel back, the stinkier it gets. And look, we have had some success in getting them to back down a little bit. Turns out these groups don't like attention. BlackRock really doesn't like light shined on them. I always say sunlight is the absolute best disinfectant. And the more sunlight we've shown on this, the less BlackRock has liked it, and we've actually gotten them to back down. But we are seeing them kind of now start to shift their tactics, and this is one of the ways they've done it now, is they're trying to get more actual director seats with these really conflicted out people. I mean, I wouldn't be able to serve as a juror on a trial against somebody who had been my law client. That's a conflict of interest. And this is kind of the same thing. If you've worked for BlackRock and you're financially tied to BlackRock and you are now sitting on someone's board doing their bidding, that's a conflict of interest. You owe a duty to that company and to that board of directors, not to BlackRock.
Now, regarding what's going on in the Delaware legislature prohibiting the manufacture, purchase, sale, or possession of assault weapons, is this something that is spreading? John, you mentioned Washington State now,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean that's why we get involved in these guys. Look, I'm a gun guy. I make no bones about that. I don't try to hide it. Firearms are my hobby. I'm a collector. I'm a shooter. I'm a competitive shooter. I'm a reloader. I'm an amateur gunsmith. My wife would probably tell you I have a bit of a problem with guns. So the Second Amendment is one that I don't just pay lip service to. I mean, I'm very, very passionate about it. And when I see states that are pretty flagrantly violating the Second Amendment, and usually very wrongheadedly, I'm going to get involved. And that's what we've done in Delaware. People say, well, you know, why is Montana involved in Delaware? It's because I don't want this spreading. And that's what's happening here. So the Delaware legislature stepped in. They passed a really egregious, quote-unquote, assault weapons ban. Now, what's an assault weapon? That's the first problem that most of these liberals have, is they can't define what an actual assault weapon is. I can assault you with a chair. I can assault you with a spoon. That doesn't make that inanimate object inherently dangerous. That's problem number one. But the biggest issue for me is just this is a pretty flagrant violation of the Second Amendment as defined now by the U.S. Supreme Court. We've got case law on this now. The U.S. Supreme Court has in the last 10 years, roughly, put out a number of cases upholding the Second Amendment. I mean, as bad as some of these states want to ban certain inanimate objects, they're just not able to do it. But what we see is states like Delaware, states like Washington, where they keep trying anyway. This is purely political. It's driven by the hard left, unfortunately. The data doesn't even support it, guys. We had a federal, quote-unquote, assault weapons ban for 10 years. There's nothing new here. The U.S. Congress did this in 1994. They banned high-capacity magazines. They banned certain types of scary-looking rifles that had zero effect. I mean, the data doesn't lie. The data shows us that assault weapons ban on a federal level had absolutely no effect on violent crime. In fact, violent crime went up in those 10 years.
What about mass shootings? I don't recall. Maybe we just recall more recent things, but were mass shootings a problem?
Well, I mean, frankly, the media tends to blow these things up and shine a wrong light on them. Most of your shootings occur with handguns. That's just a fact. There are a handful that have occurred with, you know, an AR-15 or some sort of a rifle like that. But I mean, again, the data doesn't lie. Most of your mass shootings occur with a legally purchased handgun. And the fact is, you know, people can reload. People, just because you've limited magazine capacity to a 10-round magazine, that doesn't mean they can't carry more magazines. And that's what we see. So as good as these things might make us feel and as well-intentioned as we might think they are, you're having no effect on the violent crime rate. You're having no effect on the quote-unquote mass shooting problem. And really all you're doing is you're outlawing certain articles and turning law-abiding citizens, because that's what 99.999% of firearm owners are. They're law-abiding citizens. In fact, they're probably the most law-abiding citizens. People who have gone through the process and gotten themselves a concealed weapons permit, that's a pretty enhanced background check, and there's lots of stuff that goes on there. They're literally the most law-abiding people in the country. But what laws like this do is they target those people and make them the bad guys, when in truth they really are some of the best people we have.
Interesting that you point this out. My stepson was in town over the weekend, or I should say last week, and he went out to a local sports store here and was going to purchase a gun to take back to this Seattle area where he lives. And they told him, we are not selling to Washington residents because of Washington's new law.
Well, and what you've got there is, I mean, there's a fear of lawsuit, right? I mean, if I'm Joe's Gun Shop in Kalispell and somebody walks in and I look at a driver's license and I see they're from Washington State, I mean, first of all, there already are certain restrictions on what I can do legally. I can sell them a long gun, but I can't sell them a handgun. But if I know you're from Washington State and I'm a gun owner, I'm concerned about my liability. You know, we've seen gun shops here in Montana already get raided by the feds for a potential tax problem. They had 20 armed IRS agents show up at a gun shop in Great Falls just last month. So under this administration in D.C. that is so anti-Second Amendment, if I'm a gun shop owner, I get it. I mean, you're concerned about liability. You're trying to run a business. You probably got a number of employees that you're trying to keep employed, and you're trying to limit your exposure. So I get it. I don't think it's necessary, but I also understand that you've got a state like Washington that has gone that far to the left on guns. You're worried about getting sued. I understand.
Always a great conversation, yeah. And we never have enough time to talk about all the things we want to talk about. Next time you're in town, we look forward to seeing you here in the studio. Attorney General Austin Knutson, thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys, and I'll get up there again.
All right. We'll look forward to it. It's Glacier Bank's Community Conversations, a service of Glacier Bank, where your checking is totally free. Just about anywhere you are in Northwest Montana, you'll find a Glacier Bank office nearby, keeping you connected to your friends and your community, an important part of the mission of Glacier Bank. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender.